हरिः ओ श्रीअद्वैतगदाधर श्रीवासवि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
A. The absolute truth is non-dual consciousness. The jivas are his parts. 50 to 52 continue. Summary of 51. In the last section it was stated that the absolute reality, vastava vastu, is to be known from the Srimad Bhagavatam. This naturally raises the question, what is the essential nature of this absolute reality? In reply, Jiva Goswami quotes Srimad Bhagavatam that absolute reality is non-dual, or that which is second to none, advayam. But if we say that it is non-dual, doesn't that agree with the Mayavadi position? For they claim that nothing else exists besides undifferentiated Brahman. Jiva Goswami refute this monistic outlook in the next text. First he must establish his own thesis. Right, so here it means you have this non-dual, but non-dual doesn't mean undifferentiated. Right? Because if you're saying there's only one, it doesn't mean that the one doesn't have variety. Mm-hmm. Right? That's taking an extra step. That's not necessary. It means if everything is God, that's fine, but then the point is why would you even say the term everything? Right? Mm-hmm. Unless there's variety.
Yes. Right? So is it because we project our emotions onto everything that we see dualistic?
Yes, so I mean there's us and there's everything else. Us and them, right? Right? Because we see it as everything to enjoy, because it is separate from us. Right? But for the Lord, so then we think, well, the spiritual means it all must be one, because on the spiritual platform it is all one. But it doesn't mean there's not variety. It's just all the Lord and His energy. Right? So the Lord's not different from His energy. So therefore, He is non-dual. Right? At the same time, is that doesn't mean that there's undifferentiated. Right? That's where they're making the mistake.
So it just takes a higher state of consciousness to accommodate it.
Yes, because they still have that element of the Purusha Bhava. Because they want to become God, not that the Lord is everything and I'm still just a part and parcel and that's the way it's going to be eternally. Right? You know, so it takes more. Text 51.1. In answer to the question, what is the identity of that substantial truth? These words are spoken. Those who know that tattva call it non-dual consciousness. Jnanam advayam. Footnote 1. Varanti tattva tattva vidas tattvam yajjnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabdyate. Learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramahama, or Bhagavan. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.11. Here, consciousness, jnanam, means, quote, that which is purely spiritual, end quote. That tattva is non-dual in the sense that no other independently manifest tattvas exist, similar to it or dissimilar. It means there just is not another origin of everything. Not there's two origins of everything. Hey, I did that one. No, I did that one yesterday. Oh, yeah. But I did that one. That was the day before. You know what I mean?
It's like a broken up marriage with the same kid.
Yeah, fighting over it, you know, putting the the red sticker, the green sticker on everything in the house. So, yeah. then working it out. Right? Okay. Here, Srila Jiva... Oh, no, we're up here. Wow, went from Dwayam to... We went, Dwayam from Dhyanam here. That tattva is non-dual in the sense that no other independent tattvas exist similar to it or dissimilar. That it takes a system only from its own personal energies, and that none of those energies come into being separately from this ultimate basis of existence. So this is the non-dual. It doesn't mean that there's not variety.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yes.
I see that sometimes, very often, there is a different meaning about consciousness.
In which?
Different presentation of consciousness. Here it is called jnanam, is consciousness.
Well, here he's saying here consciousness, jnanam, means that which is purely spiritual. Because you can have the jiva having consciousness that's not spiritual.
Yes.
Like that. But here, when he's talking about the Supreme, then consciousness, jnana, means that which is purely spiritual.
But here we can see that consciousness is related to knowledge, jnana? Or?
No, he's just saying the term consciousness, or jnana, here, this is how it's defined.
Yes.
Right, rather than, you know, the element of knowing or this or that, he's saying that which is purely spiritual. Because he's bringing out the transcendental position.
It's not clear for me the meaning about... Sometimes it is said chit is consciousness.
But chit includes knowledge. Knowledge and activities.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
You know, it also means if there's activities, there must be intelligence, there must be senses.
Yes.
Like
yes.
That. So this is just showing behind is that that which is purely spiritual. So here the consciousness, we're talking about the element of just being conscious.
Yes.
Like that. You know, so he is consciousness.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Does that make
yes.
sense? So there's all these subtle aspects. So you just this is what the approach that's being used here.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's all this means all these aspects are true. It's just which one you want to bring out.
Mm-hmm.
Does this make sense?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Non-dual, when we talk about here, it means there's no other source of energy?
It means there's no other independently manifest tattva. Right? In other words, he is the independent tattva. All other tattvas are his own personal energies. You know what I'm saying? Like, well, how do you look at it? You, your stuff, the family, your money, your everything, do you see it as it's all different or it's all one?
It's all one.
It's all one. Right? Right? That's how the mantra goes, right? You know, so that's the whole point, is that that's the reality. Now, but there's variety within this. You know, that's the mistake the Mayavadis are making. Right? So now the Brahmavadis, they won't make that mistake. The non-dual, they just, it's all Brahman, so it's all transcendental. So they just, all they see is pure spirit. They don't see anything else. Jai Ho. They don't see anything else. Does that make sense? So that's why they don't have a problem with, you know, developing from this Brahman platform to the Bhagavan platform. Because it's all transcendental. So now of transcendental, the personal feature has more taste than the impersonal feature. Right? Though the impersonal feature, there's so much taste, but in comparison, it just doesn't compare. It's not like it's a little bit better, so whether you want to, you know, get involved in the effort or not, this is like it's, you know, unlimitedly better, so it's obvious that they're going to take this up. Does this make sense? Okay. Okay, so, and none of these energies come into being separately from this ultimate basis of existence. So the point is He is the original, and everything else is coming from him. So therefore, and they have no separate existence other than him. Therefore, it is non-dual. Right? Like the electricity, the generator and the electricity. They're non-different because the electricity doesn't exist separately from the generator. Like that. For the Vaishnavacharyas, two significant words in Bhagavatam 1-11 are Advayam and Dhyanam. Advayam. The first premise is that there cannot be more than one absolute reality. Any more, and they cease to be absolute. Logically speaking, the Supreme must be non-dual, Advayam, rather than dual, Dvayam. Here, Srila Jiva Goswami points out that non-dual does not mean that nothing else exists beside it. Rather, this non-dual implies two things. First, Srila Jiva Goswami, in this Anucheda, uses the term self-existent, Swayam Siddha, to describe the absolute reality. It is grounded in itself and depends on no external support. Second, nothing else can exist independently without the support of this non-dual reality. Baladev Vidyabhushan confirms this in his commentary. In order to describe the vastu or tattva with indications of its sarup, the author quotes another verse. Swayam siddha means that it is accomplished by itself. For instance, one may say that the servants are automatically austere. This means that the austere situation of a servant accomplishes his austerity by its nature. Footnote 2. Just as menial service entails austerity, the Lord's self-manifested nature, Swayam Siddha, entails that no other independent manifest tattvas exist. There is no similar entity, another supreme entity, or jiva, and there is no dissimilar entity, material substance like prakriti and kala. Footnote 3. Nothing exists independently from the Lord, be it Vishnu tattva, personal expansions and incarnations, Sarup Shakti tattva, internal energies, Jiva tattva, marginal energy, or Maya tattva, the material world. Each of these other tattvas is dependent on him in every way. Hence, the Advaya reality is non-dual, yet it always includes the infinite varieties of existence expanding from him. Right? Because the creator, you know, means there's created. Right, so they're non-dual. You know, if you say he's a painter, then you want to see some paintings.
That would be nice.
You know, no, he doesn't have any paintings. Then how do you call him a painter? No, just he is.
Yeah.
So they go together. According to Nyaya, the non-existence of anything else is self-accomplished, or the non-existence of anything else is self-accomplished, or Swayam Siddha. That is because everything else cannot exist without the Lord as the supreme shelter. So when you say non-existence of anything else means on its own nothing else will exist. It only exists because it is non-different than him. Does that make sense? So that's therefore the example of the servant. It's automatically accomplished. If you say that it's austere being, that the servants are automatically austere because the situation they function in is austere. Right? So the energies are non-different from the Lord because without the Lord they don't exist. Yeah. It is Advayam because it is assisted only by its own Shakti. Just as one may say, the bow is the second Pandu. Danur Dvitiya. Assisted by its own Shakti, yeah. So then the bow here, Danur Dvitiya, not sure where he's quoting from, it must be something quite well known. Like Pandu, he would go out just alone and he would conquer the whole world. Not that he did it with so many others, he just went out himself. Right, so then the bow is just the second Pandu because it's his energy. Yeah. That the Supreme, though assisted by his personal energies, is non-dual applies that he is independent. Just as King Pandu is being called Dhanur Dvitiya, he whose assistant was his bow, implies that no other person assisted the king, just as the spider weaves its own web and then resides in it. Similarly, Sri Krishna, the non-dual absolute reality personified, has his own energies with which he manifests the spiritual realm and then subsists in it. These energies are part of his own internal nature. They have no separate, independent existence apart from him. This is the meaning of Advayam, footnote 4. According to Nyaya, an object is considered Advaya if it is free from three kinds of differences. This is relevant because these three categories of difference are found in material nature, and this gives rise to duality, Dvaya. On the other hand, none of these differences are to be found in the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, the Tattvam Advayam. The three kinds of difference, Veda.
Does the minute particle, part and parcel of Krishna, the jiva, have internal and external potencies?
No, they're just potency. Does electricity have an internal and an external potency?
No, it's just energy.
It's just, yeah, that's jiva. So that we're that particular kind of energy. So we're jiva, you know, energy, marginal energy. Okay? Why, you had a doubt or something? You wanted to know whether the potato was internal or external?
Internal, of course.
Non-dual,
yeah. You know, who puts potatoes on the outside, right? They put them on the inside. Obviously internal. Yes.
Can I share a joke, Mark?
Yes.
How many?
Potatoes.
Yeah. Yeah. How many potatoes does it take to kill an Irishman?
I don't know.
None.
He's not bad.
Maybe you can explain, give the purport. Our Irishman.
It's too soon.
Tragedy and time. Huh? That's humor. Have tragedy and then time, then it becomes funny.
Oh, okay. Sajati. Difference between objects of the same class. Okay, sajatiya, right? So jati means a group, right? So sajati means same group, right? The difference between objects of the same class. Material plane. Two chairs, while sharing the same function, appearance, and chair classification, are still different from one another. Whatever happens to one chair has no effect on the other. Hence, in the material realm, there is sahajatiya veda. Spiritual plane. The personality of Godhead Krishna and his expansions belong to the same class of Vishnu Tattva. The Lord expands into Ram and Balaram, and these expansions are non-different. At the same time, he is not dependent on them, but they are dependent upon him. Therefore, no sajatiya veda is found in him. Vijatiya veda, difference between objects of a different class. Material plane. A chair is different from a table in its appearance and function. Spiritual plane, material nature, being inert, belongs to a different class than the Lord. Nonetheless, no difference of Vijatiya Veda exists because material nature has no separate existence from him. The living entities belong to the marginal potency of the Lord. On account of this, they may be viewed either as belonging to the same class as the Lord, owing to their similar conscious nature, or as belonging to a different class, owing to their dissimilar atomic size. In either case, the jivas are fully dependent on the Supreme Lord, so there's still no Vijatiya Veda. Svagata Veda, difference between an object and its parts. Material plane, the various parts of a chair can be removed and replaced without changing its identity as chair. This shows that the parts are independent from each other and from the object, chair. If all the parts are dismantled, then there would be no such object as a chair. Hence, the chair is different from its parts, and it is not self-existent. spiritual plane. The Lord and his bodily limbs are fully conscious and potent, and they cannot be separated from the body of the Lord. Angani yasya sakalendriyavriti manti, pashyanti panti kalayanti chiram jaganti. Each of the limbs of that transcendental figure possesses in himself the full-fledged functions of all the organs, and eternally sees, manifests, maintains and manifests the infinite universes, both spiritual and mundane, Rama Samhita 5.32. Limb though Krishna is, his every limb is the whole entity. He performs all varieties of divine spiritual functions with every one of his limbs. Hence he is an indivisible whole and a perfect transcendental entity. Brahma Samhita 5.32 purport. Hence no difference of the type Svagata Veda exists in Krishna and his bodily parts. It is to be concluded by logic that the Supreme Person is Advayam. Okay, so jnana. The word jnana means consciousness. The significance is that this non-dual reality is essentially conscious, and it has consciousness as its attribute. Just as sugar is sweet, and sweetness is its attribute. The Mayavadis understand the word jnana to mean consciousness devoid of subject and object, the absence of form and variety. In his purport to verse 1 to 11, Srila Prabhupada defeats this notion. The absolute truth is both subject and object, and there is no qualitative difference there. As it is explained in the first shloka of the first chapter of the Bhagavatam, the supreme truth is self-sufficient, cognizant, and free from the illusion of relativity. In the relative world, the knower is different from the known, but in the absolute truth, both the knower and the known are one and the same thing. In the relative world, the knower is the living spirit or superior energy, whereas the known is inert matter or inferior energy. Therefore, there is a duality of inferior and superior energy. Whereas in the absolute truth, both the knower and the known are of the same superior energy. There are three kinds of energies of the supreme energetic. There's no difference between the energy and energetic, but there's a difference of quality of energies. Footnote 5. This is why Jiva Goswami defines jnanam in this Anucheda as that which is purely spiritual, or manifesting exclusively as living spirit. All of the Supreme Person's direct expansions and all of his internal energies are fully conscious. Gunai Surupa Bhutais Tu Gunyasau Harir Ishvara. Lord Hari, the absolute controller, possesses his own qualities. Those qualities are inherent aspects of his essential spiritual nature, Brahmatarka. So, in other words, there's no difference because for us, the living entity, whatever is around is different. Right? It's not us. But for Krishna, everything being him because he's non-dual. Therefore, the subject and object are non-different. So you can have subject and object and still not be have a problem with non-dual.
Okay. How does that work for the jiva in the spiritual world?
The jiva means because he's still part and parcel of the Lord, like that. It's not that the jiva comes into that position; he'll always remain energy. So therefore he's not different from the Lord. So the Lord is, you know, there's that closeness that's there. That makes sense. Here, because of our desire to lord it over, there's a difference in our position. Right? But in the spiritual world, then there's no difference in the position.
We're actually removing ourselves.
We're removing ourselves, but at the same time, it's only removing because we don't understand that we are non-removed. Yeah, if that makes sense. Means unless there's a lot of mosquitoes, don't always keep the smoke down. You know what I'm saying? If you see people fidgeting because of mosquitoes, then put it down. But otherwise, see, it's just if there's smoke in the air, mosquitoes won't come around, right? But if, you know, sometimes there's a lot of them, then when there's a little bit of freshness, then they may try to come around. But like in this kind of thing, just that it's in the air. they get bewildered. Right? Okay. Does that make sense? Otherwise, everybody has a bit of a difficulty. Yes.
Can you say that the jiva in the spiritual world is actually a doer of peace?
He's not the doer. I mean, you, on one level you can say yes, but ultimately, because he's the energy of the Lord, that still it's the Lord who's doing everything. But the point is that it's about rasa, because the tattva isn't. See, with Krishna is the element of the philosophy. That's not the important element, right? The important element is the relationship with his parts and parcels. That's what's important, because that has taste. So, in that way, then, the jiva, though he's only functioning, in other words, what energy will he use? He can only use the jiva energy. But that energy is dependent on Krishna. But that's not made prominent. You know? Because otherwise, where's the rasa? You know, just like, let's say, the parent is there with the son, and, you know, like, he's 3 years old, father's big, you know, let's say the father's a good physically, but then they're wrestling, okay? Who wins? Right? The three-year-old, you know, he does something, like that. But the whole point is how did the adult fall over? By the child's energy or by his own energy? But the whole point was that's where the fun is. Does that make sense? In other words, there's more taste there. That's the thing. The sweetness and those things come out. While he's wrestling with, another wrestler, then it has its taste, of chivalry or this or that. But the primary rasas doesn't have it. So the primary rasas are higher. They're not dependent upon these things. Yeah. Okay. There's no difference between the energy and energetic, but there's a difference of quality of energies. The absolute realm and the living entities are of the same superior energy, but the material world is inferior energy. The living entity in contact with the inferior energy is illusion, thinking he belongs to the inferior energy. Therefore, there's duality. Therefore, there is a sense of relativity in the material world. In the absolute sense, there is no such sense of difference between the knower and the known. And therefore, everything is absolute. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.11, purport. Does that make sense? So, in other words, here is these principles are what need to be brought out, right? Appreciation of these principles. That's what makes these things work. Then you apply them. Does that make sense? Like in the discussions, then one tries to catch, okay, how this is all there, so it's non-different, so it's working, but then it's applied, because Bhagavatam is the important scripture, then it's about the interaction between the Lord and the devotee. So that's the primary feature. Mm-hmm. Right? But we may get bewildered because we think of things in accordance with duality. So this makes it but the Bhagavatam shows how there is non-dual, but it's still rasa. Yes.
But who is the knower and who is the known in this situation?
Whatever it is, but Krishna is the knower and we're the known, but there's no difference because we're still his energy. So he knows himself. But at the same time, it's this variety because he being the perfect entity, everything expanding, is conscious. At the same time as if there's going to be conscious, then there should be unconscious. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, then everything's there. But the point is it's not actually dual. Right? It means, is darkness separate from light?
Absence of light.
Yes. So the point is its existence separate from light? No, it's dependent upon light.
Yeah.
You understand? So you can just say light, or let's say we say temperature. It includes hot and cold. You know what I'm saying? So whatever is there, then when we discuss character, that means also discussing lack of character. Mm. You know what I'm saying? So we can see that there is the element of non-difference. But we have to understand, but that doesn't mean that there's no variety. Right? There's not superior and dependent. Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Can I be in the stage of Krishna unconscious?
Can you be Krishna unconscious?
Feel this is my platform.
Krishna unconscious means as a natural position?
Oh, just because you have Krishna conscious, and then this is the place for the Krishna unconscious.
No, it means the place for the Krishna unconscious, but that's not the natural position.
Yeah.
Like that. The natural position means... The point is one's conscious. Now it's a matter of whether you're conscious of Krishna or not conscious of Krishna. But conscious, then one is, right? If one's not conscious, then, you know, not very fun at the party, right? You don't spend your time hanging out with the one who's unconscious.
Maybe Krishna unconscious after a really good feast.
Krishna unconscious. No, but then one is aware of how much prasad is in your stomach, and the prasad is Krishna, so therefore you're conscious of Krishna.
That's true.
So you always end up. You know what I'm saying? So it's not a position to take. People are unconscious of Krishna, but they're still conscious. Right? So that's the duality, is that there's the... You have these two, and then you have that the living entity is consciousness. You know, and it means he's conscious of the material energy, but he thinks he is the material energy. So there's a difference, right? It's not absolute, right? And the spiritual world is absolute, so it's one, because the knower and the known are both conscious and on the same spiritual platform. In the material world, then the variety here creates a duality. So that's why the Mayavadis will make the mistake that get rid of the duality here so that there is nothing. Then you'll have spiritual. No, you just have to get rid of the illusion, because the problem is Maya. Right? So that, but they're so stuck on the oneness, but they should be stuck on getting rid of illusion. They get rid of illusion, then there's no problem. The problem is the illusion. The problem is not that there's two. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? That's just false ego. Right? So that's where the mundane part. The correct part is that there's illusion. The incorrect part is that you know, everything is just the same. Right? By having no differentiation. It means there's nothing there, basically. That's why we're saying it's Buddhism. There's nothing. Mm-hmm. 51.1 continue. And because the word tattva also implies the ideal of the final goal of human life, this tattva is understood to embody the highest happiness. This also indicates that its existence is eternal. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan gives a Shastra quote to validate this statement. In the Upanishads, Brahman is described as knowledge and bliss. That is its swarup. Why do you say that the supreme energy is only knowledge, jnanam? The word tattva is used. This word indicates the highest entity. This also means happiness, since happiness is the goal of all methods. Thus, tattva means knowledge and happiness, but knowledge and happiness are temporary. Okay, so he's quoting from somebody?
Yeah.
Okay, so someone may say, but knowledge and happiness are temporary. Because we're getting into why use the term tattva or use the term jnana. Right? So 6. This is the objection raised by the Mayavadis, who argue that consciousness, chit, and bliss, ananda, are passing events belonging to the inferior plane of existence, vyavaharika. In other words, they are not permanent states of being, paramartika satta. They are temporary products of avidya. But even if that's there, why do they talk about Brahmananda? Right? Because if they can't distinguish here between, I mean, there's this ananda and that ananda, so that means you can have the one existence, and I mean, have the one principle, and have two states of existence. right? The material within illusion and that which is beyond illusion. Right? But they're saying, no, there can't be illusion. So they contradict themselves by saying that there can't be happiness, only knowledge. But then knowledge is also a quality. So why do they pick knowledge and not happiness? Right?
I think they also deny that there is knowledge on that paramarthika plane.
So then why worry about it? What's the whole, you know what I'm saying? Why get so in the importance? Then why would the Vedas say the Brahman is knowledge? So then this means that the element of that jnanam must mean that transcendental state. that is knowledge. So then that means, by being on that, why would you endeavor for it unless it's going to get a result? It means one's here, one is making an endeavor, and one supposed to become Brahman realized. So that means that it'll give an effect. So sambandhavide prayojana still remains. Yes?
And what do they claim to be their permanent state?
Their
permanent state?
Their permanent state.
Like Chit and Ananda are passing events. So what would be their permanent one?
But just somehow or another the Brahman is undifferentiated. You know, it's just this existing. They're just part of existence, but you know how that's important or stuff like that. And you know, in other words, they've created it for themselves, like that. So they're making that mistake. So that's the mundane part: is that they have to define it this way. That's why it's pointed out. It's actually Buddhism. It's actually not a Vedic philosophy at all. They're just using. The differences between a Buddhist and a Mayavadi, the Mayavadi accepts the authority of the Vedas. And so they're trying to establish their Buddhistic, atheistic philosophy on the Vedas rather than not. You know what I'm saying? But it still makes it, you know, just as bogus. But because they've accepted the culture and the Vedas, therefore if you can show a different interpretation, then the person having understood that will continue to follow the Vedic authority and Vedic culture, like that. That's the idea. Is that you know, one step at a time, you move them. Yes, yes.
Yeah, Jiva Goswami, he refutes Buddhism in the next book and the next Anucheta.
In next Anucheta. Okay. Okay. So then. So the highest entity must also be eternal. It is eternal because it was explained that it was Sarup Swayam Siddhi, self-accomplished with no cause. Sat Akaranam Yat Tan Nityam, that which has no cause is eternal. Tirtha Kara. You know what Tirtha Kara is, something by him, or he's quoting from something else?
It's something else. I don't know who wrote it.
Thus, the scripture deals with the sambandhi, topic of discussion, known as Brahman, with the nature just described.
It's probably a Madhva Sampradaya.
Madhva, Tirthakara. In this way, the acharyas show how the nature of the Absolute Truth is Satchit Ananda, eternal, conscious, and blissful. Jnana has an intrinsic relationship with Sat and Ananda. This relationship is clearly indicated in the Shruti statement, Satyam Jnanam Anandam Brahma. The absolute reality, Brahman, is truth, knowledge, and bliss. It is also evident in Bhagavad Gita. I am the source of all spiritual, catch there, is that in other words, it said is Sambandhavideyam, Satchitananda. Like that, the absolute reality. So this is Shruti. And I think that's, I'm not sure which, but that's Upanishad. I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who perfectly know this, engage in my devotional service, and worship me with all their hearts. Machchita, madgata prana, bodhayanta parasparam, katayantas chamam nityam, tushanti cha ramanti cha. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are fully devoted to my service. And they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always. What is this at the bottom of the page?
Enlightening one another about me. Is your last line?
Yeah, no, but I'm just saying, what's below this line? It doesn't seem to have a number. It's Is it just a continuation of the six? Is that what it is?
Yes, yes it was. Sorry.
It is. Aha. Okay, so back to the Mayavadis. Okay.
Just what you're thinking.
Just what we thought, yeah. Okay, so then, here they're saying that the objection that they raise, right, is, but knowledge and happiness are temporary, because they're taking Chit and Ananda as part of the material plane. So they're products of avidya. This is why Baladev Vidyabhushan here points out the word tattvam from Srimad Bhagavatam 1 to 11. Tattvam yajjnanam advayam. He states that it refers to the highest entity, or the supreme object of life, and it also refers to happiness. How are these reconciled? The primary meaning of tattva is, quote, the essence of something being. Tattva is the essence of something's being. Firstly, the Lord is the soul of all existence and the central point of all relationships. In fact, the essence of everything. Secondly, in general, the essence of all things is happiness, because everyone strives for happiness, and for this purpose, all objects are used. Certainly the original being, Brahman, also enjoys bliss. Even the Upanishads mention bliss as an essential quality of Brahman. Vijnanam anandam brahma. Brahma Aranyaka Upanishad 3.9.28. It follows that this non-dual reality must have a bliss, ananda feature, because all living beings, knowingly or unknowingly, are pleasure-seeking. Because otherwise, then why would you worry if it's all Brahman? Why do you care if it's not nice Brahman? Right? You know, what's the whole endeavor to get back to that original state? Because if it's all illusion that there's any separateness anyway, and there's no separate, you know, this element, why worry about it? There is a world of difference, however, between material and spiritual happiness. This is indicated by the statement in the Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 2.4.5. It is not for the sake of the husband, Pati, my dear, that he is loved, but for the sake of the self, Atma. In the conditioned state, the word self here refers to the jiva. In other words, the husband is loved for one's own benefit. We are attached to someone or something because we derive happiness from loving that person or thing. The sensation of happiness comes from our attachment or feelings of minus, not from the person or the object itself. Our attachment weakens, our happiness diminishes. In the liberated position, however, happiness derives from the Supreme Atma himself. Here, devotees of the Lord render service only for his pleasure, and they desire nothing in return. Okay. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me, their lives are fully devoted to my service, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss, ananda, from always sat, enlightening one another, chit, and conversing about me. Enlightenment concerning Krishna's greatness results in the pleasure of service, which goes on eternally. To conclude this anucheta served as the declaration of Jiva Goswami's thesis, that the supreme reality described in Srimad Bhagavatam, the Lord and his energies, all partake of his Satchitananda nature. In the next section, antithesis, that jnana is momentary, is explained. Summary of 52. In the previous verse, Srila Jiva Goswami demonstrated that the absolute truth is eternal, non-dual consciousness. Some Buddhistic philosophers disagree. So does that mean we disagree with their however disagreeing? Or?
Yeah.
Or does that mean that actually means that they disagree, however, they contend that consciousness has no persistent nature, that it is temporal and fleeting. Since the absolute is by necessity eternal, it therefore cannot be conscious, because consciousness is a temporary material phenomenon, like the illusion of individuality. Right? So they're taking some basic premise that's wrong, right? We see in these philosophies. And then they base everything on that and then try to work out what they can see or whatever the scriptural things that they work on, anything like that. So that's the difficulty that comes up, is that because this one thing is wrong, everything else is wrong. Even though they're using great intelligence, you know, their logic or sometimes proving of a particular point is well done. But that being applied to their basic premise, which is wrong, it still comes out with the wrong conclusion. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say, if the Mayavadi proves that happiness in the material world is temporary or illusory, that aspect they may do very well. But the problem is that then from that, therefore, then there's supposed to be nothing. Right? That's where the problem comes in.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense? It's just like if you're doing calculations and one number is wrong, and it's not that the other calculations aren't correct, but your final conclusion will still be wrong. Does that make sense? That's why sometimes we quote from Shankara or these other schools, because that aspect they've done very well. Right? Yes.
Do they get benefit for those aspects that are correct?
Means, but for them they're only seeing it as logic, so they only get that kind of, you know, jnana sukriti. They won't get any bhakti sukriti. You know, if we use it, then, you know, like that, then they might get some benefit. But it'll still be agyata sukriti on their part, and that has to increase. And how often do we quote the Maya part? So it's not like a lot of agyata sukriti is being generated there. One thing you can do also in here is instead of blowing, you go down and catch it and throw it. Yeah, see, like that? Yeah, then it goes up. See, it doesn't go. It's not as aggressive. We learned that in a fruit shop in Bhawanipur in Calcutta. Back in the 70s.
Did they have nice fruits?
That's not the exact point of the conversation. Yeah, the fruit shop should have nice fruits, but the point is this was in the 70s, so it's not necessarily going to relate to what's now. Point was is that's how he would get the smoke to go in rather than blow it. He would just take it and throw it into wherever he wanted to go, in the corner or this or that.
Sniper mode. Sniper mode.
Yes. Rather than engage in logical wrangling, because it's been established by logic you can prove things anyway, Jiva Goswami confutes this position by citing evidence from the topmost pramana, Srimad Bhagavatam, and various supporting Shruti texts. These clearly demonstrate that consciousness, the soul, and Brahman are all eternal and intrinsically related. He emphasizes that in the Shruti contains two types of instructions. Those that describes Jiva's relationship with Brahman as one, a Veda, or as separate, Veda. Jiva Goswami harmonizes these statements by explaining Achinta Veda Veda Tattva. Text 52. One might object, quote, but awareness, jnana, is only a momentary phenomena, temporarily marked by various forms, blue objects, yellow objects, and so on. How then can the subject matter of this scripture be identified as jnana, defined as being non-dual and eternal? You know, so you have some atheists that are quite intelligent. You know, they logically think about things. A Buddhist sect, the Shanika Vijnanavadis, say that there is only one reality, consciousness, which is changing at every moment, and no difference exists between knowledge and the object of knowledge. Just as in a dream, the objects do not exist outside our consciousness. So in the wakeful state, no distinction should be made between knowledge and the object of knowledge. Like if you're taking the dream, but the problem with what they're missing is when you wake up, then you actually are dealing with not with illusion, but with the reality, and there's still variety. Right? They're saying like just like when you wake up with a dream, then there's no dream. But then there's what's going on outside. You know what I'm saying? You see where that they trick themselves. Because they accept certain, they have a premise and they work on that. Then the problem is they don't see that it doesn't apply in this other aspect.
Yes. Just one small thing is that kshanika comes from the word kshana, which means moment. So like we say, pratikshana svadam and molipas means unit of time.
Oh, okay. So for moment.
Yeah.
Okay. When we see a blue object, our consciousness is blue. When we see a yellow object, the blue consciousness is destroyed and our consciousness changes to yellow. How then can the consciousness be called eternal? The Vijnanavadi's reasoning is that an eternal object cannot be the cause of anything. Since it is the cause that transforms into effect. Now remember, these guys have nothing. So unless they sit around and do this, they're going to get so bored. You know, really, really bored. You know, sitting up on the top of a mountain, it's freezing cold, there's no furniture. You know, then this is all they got. Right? So.
That's why blue consciousness.
Yes, why the blue consciousness. Yeah. Start the fire, then the yellow consciousness. Okay. Okay. Since it is the cause, it transforms into the effect, right? Can't be. If, for example, milk is assumed to be eternal, then it can't transform into yogurt. It must remain milk always. Since milk does transform into yogurt, milk is not eternal. Similarly, the non-dual consciousness, being the cause of everything, must undergo transformation and therefore cannot be eternal. Further, all non-eternal things are changing at every moment, although the momentary change may not be noticeable, just as the growth of a plant or a body is not perceived at every moment. Srila Jiva Goswami refutes this argument not by logic, but by quoting one of the Srimad Bhagavatam's final verses, footnote 77. Okay, so now Jiva Goswami gives a quote from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, from the final verses. Okay. In this Anucheda...
We're on footnote 7.
Footnote 7. In this Anucheda, Jiva Goswami denies the validity of this Buddhistic philosophy. Okay, only on the basis of Shabda. Unfortunately, to their great detriment, the Buddhists reject the Vedas. Thus, for our own preaching and understanding, it would be worthwhile to demonstrate how this Kshanika Vijnanavad has no basis in Anuman either. They say consciousness is momentary. If this was true, then consciousness could not be the cause of anything. Because according to logic, a cause has to exist for at least two moments. Right? It must exist for the first moment and then transform in the next moment. Right? And then in that next one, it has to be this. So, yeah, you have to get at least two moments. Like that. Okay.
Plank units. Plank units.
Yeah, so that's better. It's better than just one moment, right? Yes. It has to be two moments. Yes. So that's good.
So when you say, can I get a moment, you say, well, technically...
You only get two moments. I don't got two moments.
Sorry.
Yeah, but then what do you do when you get to... Because there's only 11 moments in a second, so there's one extra moment.
Yeah, you need to add a leap moment every couple
of seconds. Yeah, okay. Yeah. must exist for the first moment and then transform in the next. Also, if our consciousness is only existing for one moment, we would have no memory of past experiences, for there would be no continuity from one conscious moment to another. A person who has experienced an activity can recall it later on, but if consciousness is momentary, then there is nothing to recall in the future. This is certainly contradictory to everyone's experience, because they're taking it that that transformation, that is, that itself is the consciousness, rather than consciousness as an entity, and within that, there can be all these things taking place. Right? That's the difficulty. You're saying, just like, let's say you have a car, because you can change the tires, so it changes, so therefore it can't be a car.
So they think that consciousness is a verb, basically. Or,
basically, because the whole point is there's nothingness, so for them, even consciousness. So that's the improvement in the Mayavada philosophy. At least there's consciousness, right? You know, you've added it. And instead of being dark, there's light, you know.
So
that's but otherwise, other than that, it's just Buddhism. It's just the new improvement.
Not much improvement.
They also state that the external material world is a manifestation of our transient consciousness. To this, the question may be asked whether the external objects are one with the consciousness or different from it. If they say it is different, then they agree to our opinion and contradict their own, that the external objects are a manifestation of the internal consciousness. Right? So is your consciousness and what's around, is it different? Or is it the same? If they say different, then that's what we say. They say it's the same, then now, you know, we can deal with that, because then that starts to get weird, right? If they answer that the external objects are in fact one with the internal consciousness, then there's no way to distinguish between the internal momentary consciousness and the objects perceived by it. There will be no standard to separate the blue consciousness from the yellow consciousness, and thus there will be rampant confusion in our perceptions. According to logic as well as experience, the consciousness has its basis and its subject. If the momentary consciousness itself is the knowledge, then what is supporting it? To this, the Vijnanavadis offer no satisfactory answer. Also, if knowledge of external objects, along with our internal perception of happiness and distress, are not different from the self, who is the perceiver, and then who is doing the perceiving? Right? Because he said he was bewildering the atheists. That's the whole point of Buddhism, to bewilder the atheists. Right? And that was the whole. It is a common experience that the perceiver, the perceived, and the perception are distinct elements in any type of knowledge. Right? Because when they give it, they'll always break it down into these things. So Shankya makes, you know, very clear that. As we can see, the Vijnanavadi's idea of the external world cannot withstand the test of logic. They end up with a hopelessly muddled answer to the question of reality. Then they also, if they're one with the internal consciousness, then whose internal consciousness is it? Who's made all the trees and all these different things like that? Mm-hmm. Who makes all that happen? Right? Does that make sense? You know, so that's the difficulties. You have all these different things. But then, if it's supposed to be changing from moment to moment, why is it others still perceive it when you're not perceiving it? Mm-hmm. You know, so all these different things. So you get into problems there also.
Yeah.
Right. Also, they say that the Vedas is authoritative. But how can it be if everything's one?
The Vedas are or not?
Yeah, they are, right? They accept Shabda.
Buddhists?
Buddhists.
Yeah, Buddhists.
Sorry.
Mayavadis.
Yeah.
But even there, if it's not there, if there is no Shabda, but at the same time is then it has to be part of the same thing. So if you're accepting one thing, because the logic then also has to be part of it. Right? And logic would also be part of this, you know, internal changing consciousness. So why is the logic remains the same? That's the point, is they end up where it gets muddled. Because you just have to give a few points, and people accept that. You know, just like I say, you know, it means you do this, you'll make lots of money, you'll be happy. You know, so you take that premise and work very hard. But how has it been connected that, one, that money is generating this happiness, and how is it that you doing this work is generating that money? Right? That hasn't necessarily been established, but people are looking for that. They want to believe. So that's the illusion. So the illusion comes in there. So what they don't catch is that their own illusion that they are describing is the basis of their philosophy. Right? Because they want to believe that there's nothingness and I'll become happy by nothing. Right?
And up until the happiness, they're following it actually. They just don't become happy.
They never become happy, because the problem is have you heard of a Buddhist that became happy?
No.
No, you don't hear of him. You know. I mean, you have the laughing Buddha, okay, but who knows what he's laughing about? He's laughing at all the other idiots. So, you don't know what he's laughing about. You know, but it gives you the idea, oh yes, I could also become a laughing Buddha.
Right? Yeah.
Yes. So. Yes.
Even from a prajaksha point of view, happiness doesn't come from nothing.
Yes,
something should be involved.
Yes, yes. That was the point before, that there must be sat, chit, and ananda. Because if you're going to say there's only sat, you know, but then, you know, how will the knowledge get to that sat when that knowledge has come from ignorance anyway? Right? So then that's why they're defining it as spiritual reality. Because then knowledge or jnana means that consciousness, that element. So it means, I'm not sure, maybe they're taking the root words back or stuff like this. So they're getting some aspect of, they're bringing out this consciousness, but then there's ananda. So let's say there's no ananda, but then why would they endeavor for it if they're not going to be happy? Right? Like you say, why would there be this whole arrangement? If they're not going to become happy. That's the end of
that? That answers this.
Okay. 521 continued. In answer, it is said, Sarva Vedanta Saram Yad Brahma Brahmat Maikatva Lakshanam Vastav Vityam Tan Nishtam Kaivalyaika Prayojanam. This Bhagavatam is the essence of all Vedanta philosophy, because its subject matter is the absolute truth, which, while non-different from the spirit soul, is the ultimate reality, one without a second. The goal of this literature is exclusive devotional service unto that supreme truth. Srimad Bhagavatam 12.13.12. The non-dual entity that embodies the essence of all Vedanta exists, of all Vedanta texts, is the only topic. Right? So that's why we can say tattva means Krishna. Because all you're doing is studying the very aspects of Krishna. Right? In other words, who is he? Is the absolute, his energies, rasa, right? The nature of the jiva, the nature of the non-difference, right? Then that the nature of the process, the nature of the results. So that's tattva. Right? So dasa mula tattva, but they're all aspects of Krishna. So Krishna is tattva, just like he is rasa. The heart of Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, means that's. Okay, the non-dual entity that embodies the essence of all Vedanta text is the only topic. The heart of Srimad Bhagavatam. This tattva's identity is defined by the statement Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma. Brahman is eternal existence and consciousness unlimited. That was the one from, yeah, oh, that's Taittiriya Upanishad. Yeah, I didn't think it was that one.
There's two that we read. One was Vijnanam Anantam Brahma.
Yeah, that was the one that I didn't read. That's Brihadaranyaka, yeah, because this Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma,
yeah,
is Taittiriya Upanishad 2.1.1. It opens with that. It's been a while. That this tattva is the only cause of the entire universe is stated in phrases such as, hearing of which leaves nothing unheard, Chandogya Upanishad 6.1.3. Because it means if you heard about this, there's nothing left. That means you've heard everything. So that means the absolute truth must include everything. by discernment of which all that is to be discerned becomes known. And, dear boy, in the beginning there was only Sat, the eternal reality, Chandogya Upanishad 6.2.1. Right, because in the position of Sat, or existence, that's where we put the position of knowledge also. Right? So that aspect is there, because Shankarshan is that knowledge. But at the same time, we're talking about pure consciousness, because then you're aware of that knowledge. Then you're aware of that knowledge in relationship to interest to interacting. Then you're conscious and aware of that knowledge in application. Then you're aware of the result of that application of that knowledge. Mm. Does that make sense? So the consciousness and the knowledge then basically are non-different. It's just how you're applying them to appreciate. Does that work?
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. That the intentions of this tattva are always fulfilled is expressed by the words, he glanced and desired. Let me become many. Chandogya Upanishad 6.2.3. The one characteristic of this tattva that most effectively helps one begin to understand its nature is that this tattva shares with the jiva its integral part, yet a separate spiritual entity, oneness in substance. This oneness is known from statements such as, you are that, tattvamasi, Chandogya Upanishad 6.8.7. Not that you are that means you become that, because that means you have to be dual, and because otherwise, how do you become that if you're illusion in the first place? Right? Does that make sense? So it can't be this you, can't be that on this how do you say it? The Mayavadi platform. Because if you are that, means that transcendental, as you know, the transcendentalness, we are that transcendentalness. Right? So the Supreme Lord, he is everything. We're part of that. So therefore you are that. But otherwise, they couldn't use you are that, because the you is an illusion. So then the illusion is that, is Brahman. You understand? So that's why we're saying is that they're actually an illusion because of their material desire, you know, to control and enjoy. So this is how they can be God. You don't get better controller than that, and supposedly you don't get better enjoyer than that. So that's what they want. Yeah.
So it should be you don't exist.
You don't exist. Or that is that.
That's good.
And that could
otherwise work. It's dual.
Yeah. 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 That's you are that. So that's the thing, is they don't catch that they're being tricked. Mm-hmm. Right? That's why Krishna, he says of cheaters, he's the cheat.
Yeah.
Right? So in other words, the cheatingness of cheaters, it's actually Krishna. Yeah. So Krishna cheats the cheaters.
Yeah.
They think, I cheated, you know, but they're being cheated.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they're actually dealing wrong in the philosophy, coming up with something bogus, but he even tricks them. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. The one characteristic. Oh, okay. What did I say? Okay. The Vijnanavadis. Okay, we're still. View is due to a material conception of the absolute, where the energetic cause undergoes transformation. This understanding does not apply to the absolute realm. In our experience, material energy is a constant state of flux. The Lord and His internal energy, however, are not under the same system of natural laws that govern material nature. From Ishu Upanishad. The personality of Godhead is perfect and complete, and because He is completely perfect, all emanations from Him, such as this phenomenal world, are perfectly equipped as complete wholes. Whatever is produced of the complete whole is also complete in itself. Because He is the complete whole, even though not so many complete units emanate from Him, He remains the complete balance. Right? So things are coming from Him, but He still is the same. So emanations come from Him, but they're not separate from Him, because they are Him. So He still is the complete whole. And because it's coming from him, it's perfectly complete. He's perfect. So it comes from him, it's perfect. Right? So therefore, there can be variety. But at the same time, it's still all Krishna. Right? So he still remains the complete balance. Right?
Yes.
The analogy given in the previous text also applies here. The spider weaves its web, but is not bound by it. To understand the absolute truth, one must first shed all their preconceived notions based on material conditioning and simply hear from authorities in disciplic succession. Because that's where doubts come up or misgivings, is because we're trying to apply our mundane conditioning onto the absolute truth. Right? This is aropya. Right? Aropya means you apply your position onto, you know, devotional service. Right? Like aropya bhakti means that you are applying your interests onto to devotional service, which is pure. Right? So therefore, what does that generate? Mixed devotional service. There, so aropya bhakti and mistra bhakti are the same thing, but one is taking it how it comes about, because you project your own idea onto it. Bhakti is pure, but you project an idea of karma or jnana onto it, and therefore engage like that. Does that make sense? So what we're doing is going through all these and slowly, slowly dealing with all these different aspects of karma and jnana that generate all the doubts. Does that make sense? So that's why it's always means you want to be able to deal with it in its natural state. Then from that, apply it back into its application in one's life. Does that make sense? Because then the principle, if it's understood, then you can always apply it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if you take the principle as a detail, then as the situation changes, you won't know how to use the principle. Does that make sense? So the principle has to be understood in its own natural logic, its own position. Then you apply it. Does that make sense? Because the principle is very simple. Like that. The detail is where it becomes complicated. Right? And it's simple in that it's connected to Krishna, it's all being used for Krishna. But the difficulty comes... I remember there was one, what do you call it? Statement made, I remember, in the Boy Scouts. It said, smoke follows beauty. So that we don't have to feel bad. Because it used to be so, if the smoke was wherever you were standing, the smoke, if you'd move, the smoke would always go to wherever you are.
Every time.
Yeah. So that was the logic.
Okay, yeah. Must be.
So there for us.
Okay.
Mars, an example of that. Not understanding the principle, and then when the situation changed, would be what, like in practical devotional sense?
Well, let's say, because for a particular situation, you'll use specific words, right? Then, so if we understand the principle based on the words, our understanding of the words only, then the difficulty comes is then if the situation is such that it would give a different understanding of those words, or they could be applied differently, become confused. Yes. But if we understand the definition in connection with the principle meaning that which always applies, then it's a matter of us making it apply. Does that make sense? Then it works out easy. It takes time, it takes effort to do that. But the point is then it works. Otherwise, then if we don't follow that, then we're going to come up with always there'll be some doubt. Right? So here he's going through Jiva Goswami's removing all these little, you know, doubts by always bringing it back to Krishna's Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? So that in itself, just the definition of all those, you know, we have different ideas. You know, supreme, you know, does that mean, you know, is it, you know, how you say,
you know, it's the topmost. Is it, you know, how you say, a group of lady singers? Is it, you know, a dessert? Is it, you know, I mean, it's what you understand? So one has to understand the original principle that it's establishing, yes. Right? But one has to apply it into your life, so that process is important, but you have to, you catch the principle first, then it makes it easier. Because otherwise, if you directly try to apply it to what was your situation, and it gets confusing, that's because the terminologies or things you're using in a particular way different than how it's being explained.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Yes.
So can you summarize that the principle is related to a mentality?
The principle is related to... No, you relate the principle to a mentality. That the principle always applies. Because that's defined. That's Krishna. He's Tattva. So then it's already defined. Then, as we said, is if you're going to have, let's say, a good quality, that means then you're going to have as a subordinate energy, of that energy, a lack of that quality. Like you have Lakshmi, so you have a-Lakshmi.
Yes.
Right?
Unlucky.
Yes, unlucky. Right? So they just go together. But it's subordinate. It means lucky is the main principle, and unlucky is the subordinate. Right, because you can only be unlucky if you don't have luck. Right? Does that make sense? So, but the point is lucky is based in Krishna. She's connected to Krishna. So if you catch that, then you can apply it, because then you can understand what is lucky, what is if you always see it's connecting to Krishna. Because Krishna is the one complete stable aspect. All the energies seeming are so much different variety, but because they're all Krishna, then everything's reconciled. Right? If we don't see a connection to Krishna, then we have all these different aspects that become confusing. Does that make sense? So confusion means we're not seeing it connected to Krishna. So we've been in the material a long time, we have a lot of confusions, so therefore... All these so Krishna is approached by all these aspects. So that's why it says there's only one topic, Krishna. But we have unlimited aspects on how we can discuss Krishna. Does that make sense? So it's not something different. That's why when the Mayavadis or the Buddhists, they're saying it's something different. There's the absolute and then there's something different. Our point is no. Even in discussing what's different, it can only be understood in connection with the absolute. Then you really see it. Yes? Yeah. Okay, so one must first shed all their preconceived notions based on material conditioning and simply hear from authorities in the cyclic succession. Because that's the simple. If you do that, then you just accept it. Then you try to apply it. So questions come up in how to apply it. Yes. Not in whether it's real or not. Yes. But otherwise, if not, then you go through and deal with all the misconceptions. It's just it's more difficult. Yes. Okay. Right? Because that's why he goes to point out that Shabda is correct. It's absolute. Then you don't have to worry about this. You're trying to, establish the absolute in connection to your preconceived notions, right? Because we've been in the material world since time immemorial. There's a lot of preconceived notions, right? So the idea is that accept that Shastra defines everything and it is the absolute truth. Then it's just a matter, okay, how does this apply in my life? So in other words, it's always correct. There's no such thing as, it didn't make sense or there's some fault here. No, there's no fault. If there's any fault, it's just my understanding of application. Does that make sense? The absolute truth is the absolute truth. It's not just an opinion. That's why he's going through so much logical explanation just to establish that. Right? Okay, fine. We'll stop here because otherwise then Baladev gets into further explanation.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Srila Prabhupada ki
Jai
Sarvaveta Bhaktivinoda ki
Jai
Jainatai Gaura Premi
Hari Om.
Bhagavatam classes where Prabhupada stated that it's not about whether or not Krishna takes his birth, but why.
Just why. His point is they're facts. Yeah. It's not a question, it's not a discussion that what is being given by the Shastra and given by the Acharya is not fact.
Yeah.
It's a matter of why is that fact?
What are we going to do about it?
Yeah, what will you do with this fact?
Yeah.
That's